And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Good morning, good afternoon, whatever time of day it is that you are listening, folks. Thank you very, very much for listening. The date today is the 14th of April, year of our Lord, 2022. Welcome to yet another edition of the Bunny Cardigan Show, presented by The Athletic. I'm, of course, joined by the on-again, off-again man who wears the cardigan, James Edwards III of The Athletic. James, can you hear that? Do you hear that sound? That's Zoom audio. What are we using Zoom audio for? Who do we got on deck for us today?
You should apologize to me first.
For what? Why did I do?
Because you told me I just, like, don't get guests. I just kind of just say I'm going to get guests and then don't do it. And then you've been asking me to get this guy for a while.
Yes, I have. And yes, I have. James.
He's here.
James had to flex on everybody. And I think you did this despite me, but I'm very, very excited. This is a very big day for both of us.
You were
big
getting
day
a little disrespectful.
Put me in my place. James, what do we got today?
Motor City Cruise head coach, DJ Baker on the show. DJ, thank you for joining us, man.
Sounds like you guys are excited to have me. Hopefully it's not too big of a letdown for the fans.
Absolutely not.
No. People have always been interested in your story because they know that you came from the Pistons organization in terms of being a player development coach. You were with Dwayne in Toronto. We've done stories together over the years. So you're obviously, and like, I know a lot of player development coaches usually play the background, but because of our work over the last few years, people have gotten to know who you are and are very interested. So now that you've kind of catapulted to this head coach job, I think there's a cool story there. And I think a lot of people have questions about like the dynamic and also the dynamic of being a first year head coach. So we have some fun questions for you and I appreciate you doing this. And Nick wants to know how close he was to making the team before we get started.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm not going to amend that. Go ahead.
Knowing that selling tickets and getting fans in the seats was something that was important, we thought from that standpoint, he could obviously add a tremendous amount of value.
I love like the not winning games, but as like a circus act, he would be really good on this basketball team. My question was essentially going to be like what was the process for you and Rob to decide? Cause you guys picked Jalen Johnson first, right? He was the first pick that you guys had. He's from Ipsy. I was in Los Angeles when the draft happened. I had my suit on. I was ready for the call and it didn't come, but I figured that's what next year's for. It's just an opportunity for growth. I want to start this out on a note of like, I don't want to like just start by gassing you up, but James can attest to how frustrated I was when Coach of the Year got announced. And I'm not the like I sent James like four or five all caps like explicit or expletive texts that I will not read aloud.
You have a big fan of Nick.
I was really upset for like the last like month. I was like, when do they announce? I was like, okay, it's like around when the playoffs start. So as soon as the playoffs start, every single day, I'm checking Coach of the Year, Coach of the Year, Coach of the Year. I just want to say, I you're going to be a diplomat and you're going to be like, well, it's a group effort and all this stuff. I'm here to tell you right now, when you have a team who is in year one of even existing and you're top five in offense in terms of points scored, you're top five in defense in terms of points allowed, you're top five in point differential and you have the best home record in the league. I just feel like that guy you guys are the second two seed or the three seed?
The two seed.
Two seed. What so explain to me what the hell happened, and did that like were you kind of like, you know, because I know you're gonna be, you know, I know it's a group effort, but in the back of your head were you kind of like, maybe I'm gonna get this year one?
First of all, I appreciate the support on that, and knowing those statistics is pretty cool. And to go back real quick, the thought of you at our open trial, that was our first Motor City Cruise basketball event, which I don't know, you know, whatever it was, in September.
Yeah.
And thought that we've gone from open tryouts to a training camp to a showcase, first part of the season, showcase cup, into a regular season, into the playoffs, and now it's the off season. I mean, that like, even you bringing those things up is it's crazy to think about where we are at in the year. But I'm really proud of our guys and the group that was put together, the character of the players that we had, the organizational support that we were given from the top of the Pistons organization, and the coaching staff, and then the support staff and coaches that we had in place. So I remember I was with Coach Casey in I forgot what year he won it. 2018, maybe he was coaching.
He won it in 18. Yep, 17, 18.
Yeah. And I remember the Raptors organization and Coach Casey talked about, like, that's an organizational award. Like, Coach of the Year is a representation of, A, you have great players who are winners. You have an incredible staff who helps you lead the program. And you have a supportive front office that has done a great job of, A, giving you the resources you need, the support you need, and the players, obviously, that you need as they construct the roster. So I always remembered that, whatever that was now, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, when he won that award, that it was so much bigger than him. And obviously, he was the head of it, and he deserved that. But that award, to me, means it's a reflection upon the whole staff and players and organization. So I think that would have been really cool, because it would have been a representation of everybody from top to bottom. And so from that standpoint, it would have been cool. You know, something else I was really proud of is only three teams made the Showcase Cup and the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, eight teams made the Vegas Showcase Cup, the top eight teams from just total from the league, not East or West. And then obviously 6-6 from for the playoffs from East and West. But that to me is probably one of the proudest things that I am from the organization for the players, because all that means to me is, like, they had great consistency and great growth throughout. And we weren't just, like, really hot at the beginning or really hot at the end, but, like, they were, I think over the entire year, I think we had, like, the third best record. And like I said, one of three teams to make both. So I'm more than proud of, you know, but again, that goes back to, it's the organization, it's the support that we have, it's the resources we were given, it's the roster construction, it's the competitiveness of the players that we had, and then I had a great, great staff and a support staff. So it's a culmination of all those things.
I want to start here, because I actually haven't talked to you about this question specifically. When you get the job, you obviously, I'd imagine your mind is racing. You're trying to figure out how you, for the first time in your career, you're running the show. How do I want this to look? You try to prepare for everything ahead. What was the one thing that you could not prepare for as a head coach that you just kind of had to experience, or that you learned by just going through the experience? You're like, I didn't even think that could pop up in this situation.
It's funny, because I've had multiple talks throughout the season with Coach Casey about the same exact thing. And I have a completely, this upcoming year will be year 7 with him. And, you know, like, he's been great to me, but I've always respected him and always thought highly of him. But I would say I have significantly more empathy for him now than I ever have, because the one thing I did it that I knew happened, but I didn't know to the degree at which it happened, was anybody at any time can come to you with anything. You know, like, you are the guy that they come to. Logistics, travel, bus issues, players, right? Minutes, rotations, talking to the front office about what they're seeing from a developmental standpoint, what their expectations are, coaching staff, support staff. I mean, media, you can get hit it from eight different directions at any given time. And you might be, like, locked in over here, and you get hit over there, you know? So
right.
I observed Coach Casey the last 6 years to see him always have people coming in and out of his office. I was like, oh, okay. You know, he's got a lot going on, but I didn't understand the level at which, like, wow, everybody kind of relies on you and everybody looks at you for direction and answers and understanding of what's going on with the program. It all falls back on you.
What is like, without naming names, you don't have to do that. What's the most like, I'm pretty sure this isn't my job thing that somebody has come to you about.
It's a great, I think I got a lot of those. There's a few like logistical questions on travel where it's like, hey, we can't get 25 direct flights to Greensboro, North Carolina. So what do you think about this? You know, like, go, you know, like, and it's a great, it was a great question that was brought to me because it's like, okay, every option you just presented to me sucks. And it's like, what's the worst or what's the best worst option we can pick? I have no clue. Let's figure it out together. So I would say like the logistics and the travel in the G League obviously are significantly different. We're very fortunate because we were in like a lot of the teams were in driving distance, Grand Rapids, Chicago, Cleveland, Fort Wayne. So like compared to a lot of other G League teams, we're pretty fortunate and we have DTW. So we got a lot of direct flights, but there was definitely a handful of random situations where you're like, okay, we played last night at 11 o'clock. We got to the hotel at 11 PM and you're telling me we have to have a 4 AM bus in the morning for a 6 AM flight. Like, okay, yeah, that doesn't sound good. Or you can stay in the city on that random city in the middle of nowhere till 6 PM at night and have a direct flight. Like both of those pretty much are awful. So
yeah,
I would say like the logistics piece of it was probably the most just like, oh, here we go again. But, you know, I would say that that was something that was kind of different.
Your non-Detroit favorite G League city, obviously in the NBA, most of the cities you travel to are major cities. Like you said, there are the Greensboros. There's the College Park, which is Atlanta, but there's a little more unique cities. Do you have a favorite non-Detroit city or just not even favorite, but just like I would never have come here if it weren't for this job?
Yeah. In season, I have a cheat answer. In season, we went to Vegas, you know, so that's like, no.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
No, that's a cheat answer. Portland, Maine is really.
I've heard good things.
It's right on the water. The downtown area is awesome. Shops, you know, restaurants, you know, we were there for a few days. So you had a chance to, you know, we had a chance to go out to eat downtown, but really cool, small little city, brick road type thing. So that was a really cool experience. That's probably one that I would never go there in my entire
life. Yeah. There was actually
Delaware. We were in Wilmington, Delaware, which wasn't on the same level as Portland, but like, the area was cool. We were right on the river and that was cool. But I would say like Portland, Maine for where we went was like awesome. Really.
There was like this, I don't remember who published it, but there's actually not a lot of G League data that's available to the public in terms of like your on off and your defensive rating, like and stuff like that. But there is actually a metric that defines like how fun the overall experience of going to one of these games is. The Motor City Cruise, I was going to bring this up, ranked second, and first was the Maine Celtics. People love Denzel Valentine. My question to you longtime listeners of the Monte Cardigan Show will know that like 1-2% of all the questions that James will ask are fed by me, 1-2%. And one question that I've always wanted to know about, but it's not practical for him to ask, so I will ask you, is, you know, it's easy for us to tell what a player's relationship with the media is like, because it's publicized and they talk about it ad nauseum. But from like a coach's perspective, are you kind of like what's your relationship like? Are you ever going into something like, I'm not giving this guy a quote, like I'm giving him nothing?
You know, good question. I think at the higher level, it's probably a little bit more like that. You know, for us, I had a tremendous amount of gratitude for the media, especially in Detroit, because there was like genuine interest and like a lot of support. Like I remember not even just when I got the job, but when the team moved to Detroit, there was so much buzz and excitement. You know, that's one of the things I've learned in living here the last 4 years, like the the fan base and the passion of the fans at all levels, college, high school basketball, you know, obviously NBA, and now adding the G League team. Like, there was so much support and excitement that I obviously never felt like that with any media members. And I think obviously we had a successful year. So, you know, most people were pretty, you know, if we were 0-20, maybe somebody would have said something crazy, but no, it was my feel on it was just a tremendous amount of like gratitude and appreciation for the support and for the coverage that our guys get. Cause it's all about our players and helping them get exposed. So anytime we had any media opportunities, it was like an exposure for the players. So Bally's did two of our games, one against the Ignite, and I don't remember the second one that they came to. And then guys coming to games, you coming to trials.
I think like, the Drive.
Was it the Drive? Yeah, I think it was a Drive.
Yeah.
I think it was a Drive. Yeah, good call. So, it's more so like a lot of positive interactions and a lot of support and excitement, I would say.
One thing I've always been curious about, first time coach, that post game speech after a loss, is that something you can prepare for, or is that something that's just emotions in the moment?
You can learn about what other coaches do, other head coaches I've been with, what they do and how they handle it. So you can prepare from that standpoint, but you can't prepare for the emotions you're going to have after a loss. Right. So,
right.
I've always taken notes, always leadership books, learning from Coach Casey, Rick Carlisle, other, you know, Coach Gerg, like other head coaches I've been around. I've always taken notes. I've always written things down of how did they handle this? How did they handle that? Like, I've like an ongoing sheet of things that I've learned from them. So, And I like to study other successful coaches all the time. Like, that's something like I do in my free time. Like, I know what people have done. So I kind of was prepared from that sense, but I've never felt the emotions or the pain from losing as a head coach, which is a completely different level than anything you can experience unless you're the head coach, as I learned this past year. And so I always,
is that because you feel like it's your fault just because you're running the show? Like, why is the, just naturally, like if your team loses and you're the head coach, like, is it just because you feel like you could have did this better, you could have did that better? Is that where the pain is unmatched?
It's two parts, and it's not even close. The first one is the ownership piece that you just you can't feel the same level of ownership if you're an assistant coach. You could be all in, 2 feet in, work your butt off every single day, but the level of ownership when it's you and it's on your name and it's you're the guy that's held responsible, there's nothing that can replicate the level of ownership you get from being a head coach. And then the other part is, yeah, you feel like it's a reflection of you. Did you have the team prepared? Yeah. How are your practices? Are the players on the same page? Are you communicating the things the right way? Are you having your staff do exactly what they should be doing? Was your focus, where it needed to be? Did I catch everything in the moment in game like I should have? So yeah, I felt like every single loss was a direct reflection on me and my preparation and on my work. And so when you lose a game and you're like, even like our last game, I was like, man, that was on me, you know, like,
natural.
Yeah. And so you can't replace that type of an emotion when you're an assistant coach. And that goes back to what I told you about. I have so much more empathy for Coach Casey and the other head coaches I've worked for in general, just because, wow, like, even though a G League head coaching job compared to an NBA head coaching job is, you know, 1/20th the job, I still have this, can see through the same lens as them, even though it's on a smaller scale, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Even though that's not great for you to like bear the weight of every single loss, I love it. And I would prefer the coach of like my team to feel that way, to feel like that sense of attachment, you know? I kind of want to ask a little bit about, like, so with you and Rob, like, do you and like Dwayne and Troy, like, are you guys like super, like, are you guys always in contact? Like, I don't really know how to articulate this question. Like, not like going out to dinners and stuff like that, but are you guys like basically a part of each other's staffs? Is there a Slack chat? Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say from me, Rob, and George David, from a roster standpoint, from, you know, assignments going up and down, there was constant, you know, chats on that. You know, that's a daily, who's practicing with us, who are we going to have tomorrow? Oh, shoot, this guy got injured, so no longer we do. There's like 24/7 dialogue with that group of three that I listed. And then, you know, Troy is obviously overseeing it and making all the final decisions on these things. But obviously he's making decisions over the entire organization. So I would say I didn't have as much like my daily interaction, who I got the information for, was George David and Troy. And then, George David and Rob, right, which was from Troy. And then Coach Casey, me and him just have like an ongoing free flowing dialogue throughout the entire season about about anything and everything, players, how's it going? You know, he stopped in, and a lot of times we would practice, they practiced at noon, you know, we practiced at 9:30 or finish up at 11, and he'd come out of his office and watch practice for 10 minutes. And he would ask me about a few players. It was really cool throughout the whole season. You know, when we went to Vegas and we won our first games and went to the semifinals, like, getting texts from, you know, Troy or Coach Casey or different Pistons players, like, you know, yeah, a lot of players, like Rodney Magruder, Sadiq, like, guys would text me after the game. And so, like, just having that communication, even when we weren't physically with everyone, was that level of support was incredible. But in terms of like constant daily dialogue of expectations and what's happening with the roster, that was daily interaction with George and Rob, and they did an incredible job because the organization really cared about us doing a great job. Obviously, they want us to develop the guys that are either G League roster players for me that have NBA potential, or the NBA assignment players or two-way players that we had. So it was like the support of, hey, we got to get these guys to develop, but B, we want to be competitive and win. And I knew Troy really wanted to win. That's important because he came from Oklahoma City, and that's how they treated their G League team. And then Coach Casey, obviously I saw him with the 905. Winning is just in his DNA, no matter what. It's summer league, he wants to win, you know? So I kind of knew that would be the level of support that we had, but the dialogue was daily.
I have two questions. And one, I'm going to ask this one first, cause it kind of plays off that. First of all, shout out to Rob, who I've gotten to know, is just a good human being. Nice guy. I really, really like Rob. So like you talked about the dynamic, part of the reason there is a G League is for the main clubs to obviously develop players, get guys who are more main roster guys action, just get them, if they're not playing much, to get some mileage under them. As a coach, when Saban, when Jamarco, Garza, even Livers were coming down to play with you guys, most of those times those guys would start, and when they're not there, somebody else is starting. Yeah. Do you have to like have conversations with the guy or guys who are there every day, because they are pretty much direct to the Motor City Crews, but the point of the G League is to get these NBA guys ready as well? Like, is there a conversation, or do these guys kind of know what they signed up for?
Yeah, no, I mean, they know what they signed up for, but the communication piece of it is critical. And thank goodness the front office, Rob, they brought in very high character players. I'm talking about the 10 G League roster guys that we had, mm-hmm, very high character guys, where they weren't going to just, you know, completely become disengaged because, oh, all right, Saban's here tonight, so I'm either not starting. Sometimes it meant this guy's not even in the rotation tonight if multiple guys were there. We had a guy, Trayvon Palmer, who was starting, yep, at the beginning of the year, playing 40 minutes a game, helping us win games. And then there's games he didn't start and didn't play. And add this to it, we were winning. I mean, if right, you're losing, if you're 1-5 and the NBA guy comes down and you don't play, it's like, okay, that makes sense. We were winning. So yeah, that adds another layer of like, this guy's like, we don't need this guy to win. We're winning right now. No, but I would say the thing that really saved it, A, it started with the character of our players, was absolutely critical. B, in the very first team meeting we had the night before training camp, I list out these like four G League keys to success. And the biggest one that held true throughout the entire year, I said, was adaptability. And I said it with conviction the night before training camp, but now that I've lived a season of it, it's a different level of like belief that like you have to be adaptable. You have to be. And if you can't handle the change, this league's not for you. You're better off going overseas and just, you know, and being on a steady roster. And thankfully we had like, and the guys who did come down, the assignment players, the two-way players, they embraced the cruise. Like it wasn't like,
right.
So that also helped like our G League roster players, like embrace them more. It's like, they didn't big time us, or they weren't above it, or they weren't like, oh geez, I'm in the G League right now. It's like, there was great togetherness and we were very connected as a team. And I knew I had to pour into the 10 G League guys I was going to have for the whole year. I knew I was going to have those guys for 50 games, and I might only have Saban or Garza or Livers for 10 games, 20 games, whatever it might be. But these other guys, I'm going to have you for 50 games and right. every practice day as yeah. well. Sometimes they didn't come up. Think about that. Sometimes they didn't come up till the day of the game and they missed shoot around. So my number one focus, I had to pour into the 10 players I knew I was going to have for the entire season and build a great relationship with them and let them know, like, my number one goal is your individual development. Like, how can you improve your value in the marketplace so you can be in a better position in 6 months from now, this summer, next season? How can I help you grow, develop, and take the next step forward in your career? Even if your playing minutes in the game are affected over the next three games, because we have saved the next three games, my focus is still, how do I get you better and improve your value? And I think when you have like that genuine care for players that you truly, 1 through 10, I don't care if a guy was out of the rotation, how can I help you get better to improve your value for next season? And I think they all knew I was pretty genuine about that. And then the G League, like I said, the NBA guys that came down fully embraced them as well. So there was like a culmination of multiple things that led to it actually being a pretty smooth process, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Difficult, but it was pretty smooth.
Nick, let's take a quick break and come back.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And we're back.
Okay, really quick. I know James said he had two questions. I think I know the direction that you're going to take. So I just want to, last thing on the cruise, just one little thing that you said in there, you know, just on players coming down from the Pistons, whether it's Saban or whoever it is, Luka. I don't want to say how easy is it, because I guess it could be pretty easy, but how often do you really see these guys, you know, get sent down and like kind of big time it and be like, I'm better than this. Like, I'm above this. Like, how common actually is that?
I think it's very common in the G League. You know, I think it's about, you know, like the growth mindset that the players that you're bringing in, like, but we had examples upon examples of, I've seen guys do it. I saw Pascal Siakam do it. I saw Norm Powell do it. I saw Fred VanVleet, DeLon Wright. If you look at the length of their careers, You look at the salaries that they all have right now. I told these guys, this is a springboard of your development to the next step in your NBA career. And there are countless examples. I mean, I did a lot of research last summer. My assistant's like, I put together a list of like guys that have been in the G League, how many games they played in the G League, how much money they're making now, you know, so on and so forth. So it's like, guys, if you come in and you embrace this and you go 2 feet in, this can springboard you into what these other guys have accomplished and have done. And that was one part of the sales job right there, is letting them know, like, this is really, don't miss the moment. Do not miss the moment to get these game reps and to get, you know, play pick and roll defense and rebound and play pick and roll offense and make reads. Like, don't blow this, because this is going to directly translate to your NBA game. I'm not going to put you in a situation you had to be blunt, like, hey, this is the organization's vision for you as a player. And Troy was great. Rob was great. Coach Casey was great of telling those guys, you're going down there so you can develop this. And when you go down there, you better do this. Pick up full court, rebound the ball, switch with your defense versatility, make the right reads in the pick and roll. There was a very like clear instruction from front office, from Coach Casey, and from myself, and we're all aligned. And so they saw the examples of, okay, like a lot of guys have done this and had crazy successful NBA careers and made great money. B, the organization values me as an individual and they want me to improve as a player. And they've given me my blueprint of what I have to do. And C, we're here to win at the same time. Like everybody was trying to win and take it serious. So I would say the overall theme of that to me is organizational alignment. If you have the organizational alignment of everybody's on the same page, from the G League head coach to the NBA head coach to the G League GM to the Pistons GM, and everybody's aligned and on the same page and saying the same message. And we have competitive guys too. So honestly, like, that's the other thing. Like, they just wanted to play. Guys were excited to come down to the G League. I was blown away. You know, a few times, you know, Saban didn't get minutes, or Luca or Livers or Pickett or Chris Smith. They didn't get minutes. They'd come down like ready to go. And I was like, wow, like, not only are they like not against it, they're like, okay, like, let's get to work. So all around it was smooth. But there's no question, I know other scenarios with other teams where guys were not excited. Nobody was excited. They were there. And that's a real thing. That's a real thing. But, you know, the character of the player you have and the alignment of the organization pretty much should clean up a lot of those issues or concerns that you might have.
I want to transition just a tiny bit. Obviously for you, taking the job as the head coach, you got into coaching. You want to, as you go throughout your career, you want to see where this goes, what you can get, where you can get to. And obviously becoming, when the job came to you, becoming the Motor City Crew's head coach, you, in your mind, was a great opportunity to not only be a head coach for the first time, but to advance in your career. But I think most people would be like, there's no question, like, if I have a chance to become a head coach, no matter the level, I'm going to do it. But in your position, you were a development coach for a team that was starting to get some of the better young players in the NBA. You worked closely with Sadiq, obviously Cade coming in, Isaiah Stewart, Killian. Did you have to weigh that? Like, this opportunity that they've asked me to do is a phenomenal chance and something that might not happen again. And on top of that, a lot of guys who are G League coaches have become NBA head coaches. Also, Sadiq Bey looks like he's going to be really good. Isaiah Stewart looks like he's going to be really good, and I can help them get to that point. Was that something you tossed around in your mind too, as you kind of made the decision to come over?
That was the hardest part, you know, when we met and talked about it. The developmental part, obviously I understood what position I was in within the Pistons organization and my role that I'd be able to play through, you know, very important rebuild year, restore year that the Pistons were having. But I was going to miss the players more than anything else. Like, I love working with Sadiq, but I really enjoy Sadiq the person that much more. And so not being around those guys, Killian and Cade and Isaiah and all the guys, that was a difficult thing to miss out on. But I felt like this. I was able to influence the development of so many more players on a larger scale is the way I viewed it, as opposed to, okay, I'm going to work with
sure.
These two players are kind of under my wing this year. These three players are under my wing and they're really important and they got to get it right. But it's like, okay, there's prospects from the G League roster. There's your two-way players. And then there's your young end of the bench players. Like, the G League matters so much to the Detroit Pistons because of where the Pistons are at in their org, you know, where we're at as an organization. Certainly. If we were competing for a championship right now and we were a veteran heavy team, you know, where it's like, I don't know how important the G League team is to those organizations. And so it kind of was like, okay, I'm going to miss these specific players a lot. And I know I could have an impact on two or three of them, or I can take a huge step forward in terms of having like more organizational impact through the development of many, many players. And so
that
was a big part of it. And from an organizational standpoint, I wanted to be where they wanted me to be. Where can I provide value the best to the Pistons organization?
Absolutely.
And to Coach Casey, Coach, where do you want me to be? Like, and obviously I don't think he wanted me, you know, I know he didn't fully want me off the staff. Obviously I knew that was something that he told me selfishly. Like, he's like, that's going to be tough, but I think I could help at a larger level from a developmental standpoint as a G League head coach. So I'd say from a professional standpoint, that was the battle for sure. And then from a personal standpoint, you know, seeing the trend of just, you know, six or whatever head coaches in the league right now are former G League head coaches. And I know it'd be a huge growth opportunity for myself individually to grow as a coach, you know. So it's all about getting better. It's all about improving. And I know I took massive strides as a coach and as a leader this year because of this job, that I wouldn't have been able to hit the same strides from a personal developmental standpoint on an individual level. So the more I thought about it, it was like, it's a no-brainer. You have to do it. But those initial reactions were like, man, I want to keep working with Sadiq and these other guys and keep helping them grow and develop. A, you love them as human beings, and B, like, they have great potential as players. So that went through my mind a lot at first.
I know.
I have one more, Nick.
Go ahead.
And then I'm done.
Go ahead.
One more. While we're on topic, we've talked about it, DJ. I've gotten to know Sadiq the person this year.
They're best friends. He's gonna sugarcoat it.
Relax.
They're boys. They're best. No. Hold on.
He just admitted. He just admitted I have the best shoes in the league. That's it.
Stop.
That's
the working episode, relationship. In the last episode, we said that Sadiq is James' best friend of the year. So he's gonna. They're best friends. They're boys.
You just say ridiculous things. I've gotten to know him as many other players, but I think Sadiq. I bring up Sadiq specifically because he's very serious at first. And for the first time I covered him was through Zoom, so there wasn't a lot of person-to-person interaction.
Yeah.
Being around him this year, like, he's got a really good personality. Like, he's a funny guy, but it takes a while to get there. And I think when people hear about, like, when I tweet about Sadiq being a gym rat, or I ask questions about, like, them needing, like, them asking him to take a break and, like, go find another hobby, I think people think that's just like, oh, basketball player in the gym type thing. You can attest to this. It describes Sadiq Bey as someone who was with him every day for multiple hours to people that might not understand how much this guy loves basketball.
It goes back to what I told you really early on when I met him. Like, he is a rare breed. He is old school. He is not – he played all 82 games. Like, he was not like, I'm not sitting down. Like, you know, you can't tell him, and not in a bad way. Like, he trusts everybody and everyone has the best intentions, but you can't tell him to stop working. He will not listen to you. Like, and if you tell him to slow down, he'll say, yeah, okay. And then he'll find a private gym somewhere at night to go, you know, like he is going to find a way to get better and get his work in by any means necessary. And I truly meant that. Like, he is a rare breed. You can't find many guys like him. Like, everybody works on their game. Everybody loves the game. He has an obsession, like a true and genuine obsession with getting better and with learning. And he has a constant hunger and desire. You know, there's those games where, you know, you played back-to-back minutes and a guy played 35, 38 minutes and, you know, they're dying to get to their off day, and rightfully so. It's not a knock on anybody else, no. Right? It's like, yeah, no. You need an off day today. Like, you've been playing a lot, or you can't keep him out. And even if he doesn't go on the court, he's doing something for his body. He's doing rehab. He's in the cold or hot tubs. He's watching film. He's texting you about, I want to see this film. I want to see that film, or send me film of this, or he's watching a different game. So he lives it and he breathes it. And I think a lot of these guys do, but he does it to the point where, what day is it? It's Wednesday today.
Wednesday.
He might be working out today. You know, like, everybody else is on vacation. He might be working out today. Like, he might catch a basketball today, you know? So
I hope they locked the PPC. I was going to say something to Dwayne and Troy about that.
Took his fingerprint off for the next month. No, but he's a genuine student of the game. He wants to become great. And it's not about talk. Like, you talk about, like, you know, when guys are like, the greats do things that they don't want to do at that time, but they force themselves to do it anyways. You know, it's like, I don't feel like doing this right now, but I know I should, so I'm going to. He doesn't even have those times where he's like, I don't feel like doing this right now. That is what's crazy about him. I've never been with a player that's like, shoot, I don't really want to get this workout in right now, but all right, let's get it in. He doesn't even, that his brain can't even process that.
That's just what he likes to do.
It's what he does.
Yeah.
He wakes up and schedules his life around doing that, and everything else falls in place after. So home run person, home run character, but work ethic, approach, mentality, rare.
Yeah.
Which I think is just obviously a testament to how good Troy has been with his talent evaluation, not just in Detroit, but in Oklahoma City. And his track record speaks for itself. The question I want to ask, and we won't keep you for too much longer, maybe we'll wrap up on this. This is not a serious question at all, but I also am serious. It was in a little thing that you said, a little slip up that you had, because other people have had this before. Pre-draft, Cade said rebuild, and then never said rebuild again. He said restoration, restore. Killian's done it, and Isaiah's done it. And then you had a little slip there where you said rebuild, restore. Is Troy waterboarding people until they get until they get it in their head that it is because you can only restore something that's historically great. And the Detroit, it's like a classic car, and the Detroit Pistons are historically great. I get it. It's a great quote and I agree with it, and I'm on board with it. But it feels like there's this weird palpable energy that if you say rebuild, there's going to be lasers trained on your head. What's going on?
I think it's a mentality.
I actually had my phone buzz because it heard me say rebuild. So No. It is a mentality for sure. And sometimes you hear rebuild because that's what I've heard the last, 10 years of my NBA
life. It's in the general vernacular of basketball fans. That's just what it is.
But you know what? I love the mentality that I love. Like, Troy got shirts for everyone that said restore. I have one. That's incredible. No, we're not rebuilding. We're restoring this. It's we have a chip on our shoulder every day when we go to work. This place is special. It has been special. It has great history, and we're going to make it special again. And I take pride on that as a Pistons coach, as a Motor City Cruise coach. I know the players take pride in it, and everybody has full belief in it. And couldn't agree with Troy anymore about, this was a great franchise. And even though we're not winning right now, it's still a great franchise. And we're going to, work day and night to put it back in that place of winning at a high level. And so mine is more so of that's what my brain has been trained to say the last 10 years, but I love it. And so I'm fully bought into it. And I think the players are fully bought into it as well. And it's awesome to hear that they've started to say restore, you know, and so it's like, I love that. And that's leadership. That's leadership. And I think everyone's bought in and on the same page on it.
Yeah, absolutely. James, you got anything else?
I think that's it. DJ, okay. Thank you for the time, man. Congratulations on a great first season. Yeah, it was, it's crazy just because you were one of the first. I remember the first time I think we sat down, it was me, you, and JD in Orlando. And I did the story on what goes into being a player development coach. And I want to say that was maybe your guys' first year in Detroit. So to see you here now, happy for you. And appreciate you taking the time out, man.
Yeah, no, I love listening to this show, watch it, you know, every week. And you guys do a great job of, there's fun basketball talk, but there's also great content from the individuals that have been on this podcast in you know, previous weeks. So you guys do a great job. Obviously, more than anything, I appreciate the coverage on the Pistons, and especially the love and the coverage and the support on the Motor City Crews, especially for our players and for our organization, as they've done a great job with it. And you guys have shined a light on it to let the fan base know about it. So really appreciate it and loved being on with you guys today.
As a final note, I would be remiss if I did not say this on behalf of my dad, who is a big DJ Baker guy, because when he was, my dad was my cameraman when I was at the tryout. And there was one point where you like went out of your way to walk up to him and be like, "Hey, you're getting everything. Like everything's good. You're doing all right." My dad really appreciated that. And so did I. So on behalf of my dad, thank you for doing that. If you are listening to this on Apple Podcast, be sure to rate 5 stars, leave a review, subscribe if you're feeling generous. Even if you're listening to this on Spotify, still leave 5 stars, because this was probably one of our better episodes of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be back on Tuesday, our new drop date, with an interview with Rod Beard, who is being sent off of, well, I say sent off, sounds like he's getting sent off the pitch, like he got a red card. Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, we will catch you guys in the next one.
Peace.